I remember the table at Thanksgiving. A long wooden table, the extra leaves added to support the widening circle of family and friends, the smells of turkey, twice-baked potatoes, rich and savory sauces, string beans, food covering the center surface, sneaking up to the edges of the simple table settings my sisters and I had set. My mom hosted Thanksgiving and Christmas for 40 years. We laughed recently, remembering how one of my sisters always preferred cranberry sauce from the can as opposed to my mom's homemade version. Something about its preferred, I just saw a fist bump. Something about its preferred can-like shape in the dish. Traditions are changing in my family. As each generation moves into the next phase of life, some things are staying the same and other things aren't. In later years, we took time in the middle of the meal for each person to share what they're thankful for. A simple tradition, perhaps practiced by many of you, but one that grew more and more honest over the years, and one that I brought to my Thanksgiving table this year. It's the time of year of traditions, right? Most of us have ways we've been doing things this time of year for a very long time. We likely repeat some traditions we grew up in, some because they're nourishing for us, and others because that's just the way it's been done for so long. Traditions can feel grounding and comforting or stifling and out of touch. In recent years, I've tried to bring renewed attention to some of those traditions that continue to replay in our collective spaces this time of year. One of them is this story that features a table of pilgrims and those indigenous to this land happily sharing a meal, smiling and passing the butter as if everyone's sharing an inside joke. And we know that's not the story. It's actually a very difficult story, one of colonialism and domination, one of forced removal, violence, death of millions of people across hundreds of distinct communities, and then the denial of these difficult stories in textbooks taught to children across the country. I know that's heavy, and I don't share it just for the sake of being heavy. I share it because it's true. And as people of this free and living faith, we are called to lift up what is true. But there's more truth. Truth that I also didn't learn in textbooks. Truth in the form of the knowledge and the wisdom of these same indigenous peoples. Knowledge and wisdom needed in this moment, in this time. Robin Wall Kimmerer self-identifies as a mother, a scientist, decorated professor, and enrolled member of the Citizen Potawatomi Nation. Kimmerer weaves her knowledge as a trained botanist with indigenous wisdom. She listens and shares the lessons of plants and animals, who she says are our oldest teachers. The excerpt Sean read from the book Braiding Sweetgrass reminds us that as humans, we actually haven't been around that long. Not in comparison to some of the other 6 million species of life with which we coexist. Identifying humans as superior is actually distinct to the Western tradition. We're pretty young in the grand scheme of things. which actually is really great news, if you think about it. Because nature is this ancient and brilliant teacher, a highly complex system that has already figured out how to live in layered harmony with a vast diversity of species. And as humans, we're sort of still trying to figure that out. And as Unitarian Universalists, this is almost the exact thing we're trying to figure out. For the past few Sundays, we've been in our Divided No More series, exploring the particular polarization of these times and leaning into our faith as a guide, our principles, our values and history, and our theology. Theology is one of those words many of us might only associate with other religious traditions. But as Unitarian Universalists, we do theology too. At our newcomer class called Base Camp, we talk about how theology breaks down to the meaning of to mean the study of theos, the study of God. And as UUs, we might also say that God is a word used to represent something, a three-letter symbol that represents, points to, corners, tries to be a container for that which is of ultimate worth. We might then think of theology as the study of that which is of ultimate worth. The study of life and death, of war and peace, of love and loss, of justice and community, of division and unification. As we continue to live in these times of escalating division, as we stretch ourselves, learn new skills, stay awake to rising threats on democracy, what theology grounds us, keeps us rooted in a much larger sense of time? What theology emerges when we ask, how, ultimately, are we all connected? This is one of the questions Kimmerer asks throughout her book. How, ultimately, are we all connected? Studying and listening to the guidance expressed by the natural world, Kimmerer tells many stories. But one in particular stands out. For millennia, she says, people indigenous to these lands have made small piles of earth and planted three seeds together in the springtime: corn, beans, and squash, often referred to as the three sisters, who offer their harvest just in time for our Thanksgiving table. Together, these plants, she says, feed the people, feed the land, and feed our imaginations, telling us how we might live. Corn bursts through the surface first, standing tall and strong. Beans are next, its roots firm, benefiting from the extra time underground, slowly poking through the surface with two heart-shaped leaves and a stem curved like a hook, ready to climb. As if only ever traveling together, the bean dances upward, spiraling around the now tall and sturdy corn stalk. The green vine reaching and ducking to not interfere with the important work of the corn's own leaves. The squash, the youngest sister, finds its place on the ground, spreading its broad leaves and somewhat prickly leaves across the shared soil surface, keeping moisture and unwanted nibblers out for the three sisters. The harmony continues underground as the shape and size and function of each root system seems to also reveal an intricate dance. Benefiting from the height and the ground cover provided by the corn and the squash, the beans offer a gift in return. In collaboration with more life underground, the bean cooks up nitrogen, a crucial nutrient essential for the life of its two sisters and hard to access. Acre for acre, the three sisters, when grown together, yield more food than if grown separately. The three sisters teach us interdependence, about the ways that life depends upon, in reciprocal relationship, other life. And maybe the three sisters teach us about the ways our very lives depend upon the lives of those around us. As a faith, we talk a lot about the interdependent web of all existence, of which we are a part. It's a core aspect of our living theology. I imagine that most of us in this room have a sense or perhaps carry a knowing that your life is connected not just to everyone around you in this sanctuary, but connected somehow to all life. And it's not just connected, right? It's dependent. Dependent in that sense that each part plays a crucial, life-sustaining role for another. Which plays a crucial role for another, which plays a crucial role for another, and back around in entangled flourishing. But dependence, as a word on its own, seems to often carry with it a lot of negativity, as if dependence is something to be avoided, as if that were even possible. We celebrate independence with such fanfare, hold it up as the example of success and power, and struggle to ask for help or support when we need it as a result. But this story of independence as ultimate is weak theology. Life consistently teaches us otherwise. Life teaches us throughout our journeys that we depend on one another to survive and to thrive. We begin completely and beautifully dependent. Each story is different, of course, but likely we get sick along the way, we need surgery, have a crisis, we fell, or we just can't get out of bed. We lost too much. Or our heart feels broken. Life reminds us in small and big ways, almost guaranteeing that we remember we're not in this alone, that we're not meant to live totally independently, and that we need each other. Each experience of needing another or being needed by another, as if a tug on those threads that connect us and everything. It's often, although not always the case, that we're especially reminded of our dependence on others when our bodies have lived many years, which perhaps is an invitation for our multi-generational community, such as ours, to really honor the phase of life where we must rely on others more, honoring it as a gift. A reminder to us all of our ultimate relationship with one another, the truth of our ultimate interdependence. Reflecting on the lessons of the three sisters, the ways corn, beans, and squash live interdependently, Kimmerer says this: the organic symmetry of forms belongs together. The placement of every leaf, the harmony of shapes speak their message. respect one another, support one another, bring your gift to the world, and receive the gifts of others, and there will be enough for all. It's humbling, in a way, to witness the ways life around us has figured out how to live in complex unity. But perhaps living into our interdependence is an act of remembering. Remembering what is in our cellular memory from earlier life. Remembering reciprocity, that constant flowing movement of things offered and things received. Things offered and things received. That back and forth of energy between our many connecting threads. The corn's height and sturdiness offering the ideal trellis for beans, both benefiting from the shape and texture of the squash below. Being among the sisters, Kimura writes, provides a visible manifestation of what a community can become when its members understand and share their gifts. She continues, the beauty of the partnership is that each plant does what it does to increase its own growth. But as it happens when the individuals flourish, so does the whole. In reciprocity, we fill our spirits as well as our bellies, she says. What are your gifts? What bubbles up from within you and makes you feel most alive? What must you share? What are your gifts? How do you long to live and be? Trust that. Trust that it's needed. Maybe it's the way you listen, or the way you speak difficult truths. Maybe it's your striking attention to detail, your inquisitive mind, your ability to hear what a child really needs, the way you can design a program or build a structure, the way you immediately know in a room who might need support. What are your gifts? How can you come to know them more intimately? And how can you share them more fully on behalf of those around you? These ancient teachings from these ancient teachers tell us that the dance of unity, the song of interdependence, is fueled by reciprocity, the natural flowing of giving and receiving that is possible when we're each living fully into our gifts. And part of living fully into our gifts is offering them, sharing them, releasing them, and receiving the gifts that are offered to us in return and throughout it all. Are you corn, the first to break through the soil and offer support to those who will come after? Or squash, reaching out, keeping things well watered? Or are you beans, offering crucial nourishment to the whole system, unseen underground? In this moment and in these times, no matter your age, life is calling you to be bold and steadfast in growing into your truest self. By sharing the gifts you are meant to share in this life, may you remember that you are who you must be. May we remember the gifts generously offered by Indigenous peoples of this land. And may we continue to shape new traditions that honor all life. May it be so. Amen.